You're listening to the History Nerd Podcast. I am a high school history teacher who teaches her students to investigate the facts for themselves and decide what they think happened. That's what I want to do here. I'll present you with facts and occasionally my opinion, but I want you to decide for yourself what you think happened. Just as a note, I do my best to research each story in full, but I may miss things here or there. I strive to use the most trustworthy sources and information I can find and give you my best judgment where things aren't clear, but I'm not a professional historian. All right, let's get started. I've decided to dedicate this episode to some hardcore ladies from history. I'm going to include three of my favorite badass ladies and their stories here. I think these women are incredibly brave, and I teach my students about them all the time. Alice Paul, Carrie Nation, and Annie Easley are some of my heroes from history, so I'm really excited to tell their stories. We will go in chronological order, so we'll start with Carrie Nation. Carrie A. Nation was described as a radical prohibitionist. Carrie was born to a slaveholding family in Tennessee and grew up to marry a doctor named Charles Gloyd. Even though he was a doctor, he was also an alcoholic, and he was so often drunk that he couldn't keep a job. According to Smithsonian Magazine, Carrie moved back in with her parents when she was pregnant with her first child, and Gloyd died shortly after the baby was born. Later on in her life, she became a teacher and eventually remarried a man named David Nation, but the memory of her first marriage always haunted her. Carrie and her new husband were super religious, and he even became a preacher. She opened up a chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union in Kansas, where they lived. The WCTU was dedicated to ending alcoholism, smoking, and other bad habits. In these days, women didn't have many rights, so they depended upon their husbands completely. When these husbands were alcoholics, they struggled to support their wives and were oftentimes violent. Carrie and the WCTU were dedicated to snuffing out alcoholism for good. The main way they wanted to accomplish this was by enfranchising women. This wasn't good enough for Carrie, however. Carrie was a tall lady with a commanding presence. She knew she had a vivacious personality, and she decided to use that to her advantage. She led groups of women into pharmacies, bars, saloons, and other places that sold alcohol. They would originally just smash up the actual bottles of alcohol. On one occasion, while they were raiding a pharmacy, Carrie reportedly said, "Women, this is whiskey," and knocked over a barrel, which they proceeded to roll out the back door and light on fire. On December 27, 1900, Carrie took a hatchet and destroyed the bar at the Carrie Hotel in Wichita, Kansas. This is the first time she used a hatchet that would become forever associated with her name. Carrie was arrested but released on bail a short while later. After her arrest, she decided to spread her efforts across the country. According to the Kansas Historical Society, she was arrested several times, but her bail was always paid by the sale of pewter pins shaped like a hatchet. So she kind of popularized branding or individual branding before that was actually a thing.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to believe that around this time too, that, like I said, just with a woman, going around just smashing up bars or something like that.
Yeah. That's why she definitely makes the episode.
She's a badass.
My favorite story of Carrie Nation is probably the time she walked Kansas Avenue during her visit to Topeka. After a disappointing meeting with the governor of Kansas, who, might I add, told her she was a woman and should know her place. But it's funny because we remember her name, but not necessarily his. Anyway, she walked Kansas Avenue to speak with the bar and saloon owners. The owners were aware ahead of time, and when she got there with her entourage, she discovered that they had put up defenses and barricades in front of their establishments. This cracks me up because she's this little old lady, and they are terrified of her. She reportedly laughed and said, "Aren't you going to let your mother in, boys? She wants to talk with you." Like, how badass is that? She then very calmly begins to speak to the owners, and they come out from behind their barricades. Very civilly, she explains what alcoholism does to families and urges them to close their saloons and abide by Kansas law, which technically outlawed alcohol at the time. And this was what her visit to the governor had been about. She wanted him to actually enforce the law. Go figure. Despite a lot of bad press from this visit, it only takes about a week before Carrie and her cronies begin smashing bars again. Unfortunately, she died in 1911 before the 18th Amendment was passed and Prohibition started, so she never got to see the fruits of her labors, but this didn't stop her from working tirelessly to ban alcohol. I also think it's good that she didn't live to see the issues created by the 18th Amendment, and because we all know how much crime rose. But that's a topic for a different episode for sure. My next hero is Alice Paul. If you don't know who Alice Paul is, you better listen carefully, because we, especially the women, have a lot to thank her for. Not only is she an amazing example of perseverance, but she shows us that change can be created slowly but surely. Alice was born in 1885 to Quaker parents who believed in gender equality and education for girls. The women's suffrage movement had been around since about the 1840s when the Seneca Falls Convention took place, but not much ground had been gained. Alice's mother was a suffragist, and she took Alice to the meetings with her. How lucky are we that Alice's parents were so enlightened because their daughter went on to change our country. This girl went on to get a bachelor's, master's, and eventually a freaking PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. She became head of the Washington, D.C. chapter of the National Women's Suffrage Association. But because she wanted to lobby Congress and not go state by state trying to get the right for women to vote, she split with them and formed what she called the National Women's Party. The main issue facing Alice at this time was that World War I was ravaging the world. When she staged her first demonstration in 1913 at President Wilson's inauguration, 18,000 women marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. She even met with President Wilson later that year, who basically told her that the time was not right. World War I was brewing and would break out the very next year. However, the United States would not join until 1917. The same year, Alice decides to stage an 18-month protest. She, along with her supporters, stood outside the White House with picket signs. They were known as the Silent Sentinels, because they remained quiet while people harassed and ridiculed them. People thought it was wrong to petition a wartime president, especially about something they considered trivial, like women's right to vote. Unbelievably, Alice and her supporters were arrested and charged with obstructing traffic, even though they were exercising their right to free speech. She was in jail for 7 months, and she decided to organize a hunger strike. This was effective, but in a different way than she anticipated. The jailers and warden knew that she could get sick and die from not eating, and they didn't want her to become a martyr. So they locked her in an insane asylum and force-fed her using a tube they shoved down her throat. This plan backfired on them, however, because as newspapers published accounts of how she was being treated, more and more people gained sympathy for Alice and women's suffrage. The president announced his support for suffrage around the end of World War I in 1918, and 2 years later it became another constitutional amendment, which leads into another story about a mother writing a letter to her son that caused the amendment to pass by one vote, but that might be a story for another episode. After the 19th Amendment was passed, Alice and the National Women's Party started working on an amendment that would protect women from discrimination called the Equal Rights Amendment. But as of 1982, which was the deadline for the amendment to be ratified, it was actually 3 states short, so it still has not been ratified at this time. I debated back and forth for a long time on who to make my third bad A lady for this episode. I originally wanted Amelia Earhart, but I decided she needs an episode all of her own.
True.
So for the third bad A lady, I wanted to talk about Annie Easley. In her 2016 book, Hidden Figures, Margot Lee Shetterly tells the story of 4 different women who worked for NASA and helped pave the way not only for the space program, but for equal rights in the workplace. These 4 women were all bad A in their own ways. There are so many unsung heroes in U.S. history. These women were definitely among them. One of these women was Annie Easley. According to the NASA website, Annie decided to go to work for NACA, which was NASA's predecessor, after she read an article about some twin sisters who were human computers at NASA. The article mentioned that the space program was looking for people skilled at mathematics. Annie went to work at the Plum Brook Reactor in Cleveland, Ohio, where she was mainly involved in running simulations. She spent 34 years working for NASA. One of the most badass things I think she did was evolve along with technology. She definitely had that kind of hustler mentality. If she didn't know something, she learned it. She's most well known for developing and implementing code for mechanical computers, which is even hard to do nowadays, but back then was basically trying to write in a language you didn't understand. Even though she had a steady job at NASA, she actually went back to school in the 1970s, balancing her classes with her full-time job. I honestly think this is one of the more heroic things that she did. Most of the people that we think of when we think of heroes are people who have done huge, well-publicized, world-changing things, and those people definitely are heroes. But we don't often think of the people who work behind the scenes to accomplish the impossible. Going back for more education, even after you have a successful career, is definitely brave and inspiring. She believed strongly in education and wanted that degree. Working full-time and going to school full-time is heroic to me, but on top of all of that, she was an incredibly humble woman, and everybody who knows her or knew her said she was one of the nicest people you would ever meet. So that is my telling of 3 badass ladies from history. There's definitely more that we can include, but this is all we're going to talk about for today. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We have some exciting news. We were approved for Apple Podcasts, which means that you can now search your Apple Podcasts and find History Nerds. And there you can subscribe and also leave us a review, which will help us out a lot. Those reviews are definitely life for podcasters. So again, thanks for listening. Subscribe and please leave us a review.